It is that time once again for the Parish of the Patriots, episode 362. We got a lot we're going to cover today. As we get started off, I am, as usual, as my usual protocol. I'm recording this over the weekend, and I have to be honest up front with you. As I'm recording this, my back is killing me. So I'm hoping I'm going to soldier through it. I think if you wouldn't even know the difference if I hadn't told you. But if I do, by some off chance, sound a little off my game, that is why. But we're not going to let it slow us down. Like I said, we've got a lot we're going to get into. I think we'll have a fun discussion this week. But before we do that, we're going to get into listener supporter mailbag. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. If you want to drop something in the plate, it is always appreciated. And there is but one way to do it, and that is the snail mail address on the description page for each show. You can look at the summary of what the show is about, which isn't usually, I'll be honest, not real accurate, just because we talk about a lot of stuff. I just have to pick one of the main topics and put it on there. Because I figure if you want to listen to the show, you got to listen to the show anyway. So, but down at the bottom of all of that, you can skip past the summary, and we do have the snail mail address. It's kind of handy. It's a good, simple way. You don't even have to have a computer, but I guess you would because you're listening to this show. So, anyway, it is always appreciated. We do have some tidbits in the listener supporter mailbag. GPD, I'm enjoying the sermons. That's from Triangle Whip. Thank you very much, Triangle Whip. And we have incorporated everything together. I'm no longer separating the Christian specific segment. I'm mishmashing it all up. And honestly, I think, in my humble opinion, it has turned out better than I anticipated. I'm really happy with the way it's kind of turned out. It's as I had hoped. I think things flow. We kind of go back and forth about whatever topic and then Christian perspective and go like that. It just breaking it off was starting to be cumbersome. And besides, we're on episode 362. I got to swap things up or I myself am. I'm just going to lose interest. I don't know. Anyway, in the interests of not getting stale, we'd like to swap things up. Next up, this one's great. I got a very nice Christmas card. Yes, a Christmas card. Merry Christmas to you and your family and all the patriots in the parish. I'm looking forward to seeing the new content from Radio Albion. I'm sure Clown World will continue unabated, but it's shows like yours that help keep us sane. Thanks. And that's from Jack in Wisconsin. And yes, this was dated from the middle of December and showed up this week in a plastic bag. All contents were fine, by the way. I mean, it wasn't opened. It had just been chewed up and eaten by mail sorting machines, apparently, which were probably, you know, installed in the 1950s, and they're still making them work because that's how the infrastructure in this country is. So, Jack, in Wisconsin, I do appreciate it, and maybe you've been thinking, maybe I missed it, or he just decided not to read it on the air or whatever. No. Your Christmas card from the middle of December has arrived in a very timely manner in the middle of February because of post office things. But it did arrive. And like I say, everything's fine inside. It, like I say, wasn't opened. It had just gotten like the corner. It obviously gotten eaten by a mail machine. And they dug it out. And I do appreciate them cleaning out the machine every once in a while so that they can get out things like mail for me. Postal Service is just, it's all over the place. You know, I mailed something to Sven here a while back, you know, international mail to the UK. Put him a little letter together, put it in the mail, the UK, and he got it in like 3 days. I've mailed bills before and like, you know, within the United States, mailed a bill like Ohio or something. And like 2 weeks later, they're calling me up, you know. Sir, your payment is late, sir. We cannot redeem your payment, sir. And it's like, man, I mailed that 2 weeks ago. But yeah, it's all over the place. But in the end, it is steady. And it has actually, in all seriousness, it's been pretty a pretty reliable method. I like it. It's straightforward. It's analog. It doesn't require downloading programs or apps or whatever the crap. It requires addressing an envelope. Now, we're going to do, we're going to come at this a little different here. We're going to start off. I want to read a few Bible verses. We hadn't done that in a few weeks. It's just a few. As always, y'all know, I like to keep reading short. But then I'm going to, and this is one of those, I'm reading these Bible verses, and after that, I just want you to kind of put those verses in the back of your head, because we're going to come back to them. In other words, I'm not going to read these and then start talking about them. I want to read these. I want you to plant that seed in the back of your head, because we are going to circle back to these, because they're going to become relevant. What we're going to look at is the book of Proverbs, chapter 26. And I'm just going to read verses 1 through 9. The subject matter here being fools, biblical fools. And the book of Proverbs is all about, it has got a lot. There's a lot of writing concerning fools, but it is as relevant today as ever. But like I said, we're just going to touch on it. And I started to write down several different ones scattered about. And then I thought, you know what? I can just do 26, 1 through 9. After verse 9, it goes on from there. I could go on and on in the book of Proverbs about this topic. But this gives us a good summary. And the, you know, a couple of the money shot lines that I wanted are in this little section. So without further ado, let's hit this. And like I say, after this, just put that bee in your bonnet. Put that bug in your ear. Keep that in the back of your mind. We will circle back to it. As snow in summer and as rain in harvest, so honor is not seemly for fool. As the bird by wandering, as the swallow by flying, so the curse causeless shall not come. A whip for the horse, a bridle for the ass, and a rod for the fool's back. This is a biggie. Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou also be like unto him. Then the next one sounds like a contradiction. It's not, and I do plan to address that. Answer a fool. So we had answer not a fool. Then we have answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. He that sendeth a message by the hand of a fool cutteth off the feet and drinketh damage. The legs of the lame are not equal. So is a parable in the mouth of fools. As he that bindeth a stone in a sling, so is he that giveth honor to a fool. As a thorn goeth up into the hand of a drunkard, so is a parable in the mouth of fools. Now, as I said, just keep that in the back of your mind. We will circle back to it. Now, we're going to do something else we don't normally do. I'm going to read from an opinion piece. Just a little story. And you know I don't normally do that. We don't do articles here. It's been a long-standing for 362 episodes of Parish of the Patriots. But I'm making an exception. I'm not making really a change here. I'm making an exception here because this is... The opinion piece is whatever. It's nothing groundbreaking. But the story, the little segment I want to read out of this opinion piece is a story the person is relaying. And I thought that was interesting, and that's what I really wanted to use. And this article is titled, "And in This Corner, No One," by one Anthony Isolin. I think that's how you pronounce it. But like I said, I'm not reading the whole article. But I do want to relay this story that he tells in the article, because, again, I think it's very telling. So I'm just going to pick up here. I was scheduled in the spring of 1992 to begin teaching in the Western Civilization program, but a sociology professor who had only arrived on campus when I did had organized a student revolt against the program through a group they called Students Organized Against Racism. I attended their first panel debate in a room packed with 150 people, most of them students who wanted the program eliminated. I expected arguments from the literary critical left, and I was ready to counter them with arguments from history and from a different corner of that literary critical left. So when it came time for the audience to ask questions, I asked a young female student whether she knew that John Adams had described the new American system in terms he derived from Polybius' description of the Roman Republic. She did not. I expected her to complain that the Romans were patriarchal, so I gave her an account of a foundational episode in Livy from the legendary days before the Republic, when Rome was little more than a cow town with a king. The Romans were striving for supremacy with their near kin, the Sabines. Three young brothers on the Roman side engaged in a battle with three on the Sabine side, winners to take all. Things looked bad for the Romans when two of their horatii were slain by the Sabine curatii. Then the last Horatius did something apparently unheroic. He ran. The curatii pursued, but at different speeds, as two of them were wounded, one worse than the other. Suddenly he turned about and slew his freshest opponent. Then he dispatched the next two, one by one. The people rejoiced, but when he came home, he found his sister weeping because one of the three he slew was to be her husband. He killed her on the spot. It was a capital crime, yet the father pleaded with the king to spare his son for the great benefit he had conferred upon the city. I pointed out to the young lady that if you can't make something subversive out of that story, then you're not trying. Her reply took my breath away. I have no idea what you're talking about, she said. The audience erupted in laughter and applause, and the scales fell from my eyes. Now, this story really struck me. This man had gone into this situation believing he was going to have a discussion. Thinking, you know, believing that with facts and knowledge and understanding, he would sway the other side. He's talking to this young woman, and he's got this clever historical story, and he thinks she's going to be blown away. And instead, he gets like, duh, I don't know any of that. And everybody erupts in laughter and applause, and he looks like a fool. Remember what we just read about answering a fool according to his folly, and you will be like unto him. You see, he whipped out his knowledge. He whipped out his understanding, and he told this interesting story. And honestly, when I read the story, I'm like, that's an interesting story. I have heard the story before, but it reminded me of the story. And I thought, you know, that is an interesting historical story. He whips out his interesting story, and he thinks she's going to be blown away by this and say, you know what, this is interesting. This class shouldn't be canceled. I want to know more. Instead, he's the one that looks like a fool. Everybody, she says, like, I don't know what you're talking about. And everybody erupts in laughter and applause. And they're not laughing at her in her folly and her ignorance. They're laughing at him. The guy who, you know, knows more about a topic than anyone else in the room. And they're laughing at him. They're acting as though he is the fool. They wallow in their folly. But as you see, he is made out to be the fool. And in a sense, what he has done has been foolish. Because you see, he tried to answer the fool according to their folly. I think one of the errors this person made at that time was not understand. He went into this situation believing he was going to have a discussion. You see, I think a lot of people conflate debate with discussion because they're two different things. A discussion, if you and I sat down and we had a discussion, it doesn't matter what the topic is. You and I sat down and had an actual discussion. I might have one particular view on a subject, and you may have, say, another view on the subject. Both of us want to know who's right. What is the truth? You know, we may agree on 50% on this subject, but the other 50%, we have an opposing view, or at least viewpoints that don't necessarily line up. The common denominator here is I want to know the truth. I want to come to wisdom and understanding on this matter. And so do you. And so we start discussing, and you ask me, well, why do you think that? I've never thought of that. And I start explaining that, and vice versa. And this back and forth goes back, we go on in this back and forth. The goal here is to come to an understanding of the truth, to get closer to the truth. Neither one of us in the discussion has a problem discarding our incorrect ideas. If you make your point about this topic, and I consider that, and after considering it, I'm like, you know what, you're right. I hadn't thought of that. I got no problem jettisoning my incorrect views. Now I understand why I was wrong about that. It's not a big deal. I'm the winner in my mind because now I've gained knowledge. You know, I've gained some wisdom. I've gained some understanding on something that I wanted to understand. I'm the winner. I'm lost because you corrected me on my incorrect views. I'm the winner. Or vice versa, doesn't matter. Nobody's losing here because if we can get closer to the truth, both of us win. Your idea now has got some more, you've got some more, some more information to support your idea. You've tested your idea. You've tried it against my other idea, which has now turned out to be false. And so now you can be more confident as you continue to try to gain more understanding that you're not doing it from a foundation that is incorrect. And likewise, I've gained new information. I may come back later and we may have another discussion, and I have gone from our mutually found conclusion and found some other truth, and that helps you along. You see, you're helping each other along. That's a discussion. It's not a debate. A debate has nothing to do with truth. A debate is who can get the audience to clap and laugh at the person that you're wanting them to laugh at. That means you won. This dumb bitch in this story, she's sitting there laughing about how stupid she is. She doesn't know how ignorant she is. I didn't know like what they're talking about. And she, quote unquote, won. She left that room as ignorant as when she went in. But she was the winner. One of the things I've come to understand, come to realize, is nobody wins a debate. Nobody. Or at least should I say, nobody wins anything meaningful in a debate. The man who went in thinking he was going to share wisdom and understanding got mocked by people who were quite frankly stupid. And not just stupid, but relishing in being stupid. They won, quote unquote, but they didn't win. They left just as ignorant on the matter as anybody. It's about winning, quote unquote, winning. And winning is defined as who gets the most likes, so as to speak, on social media, who gets retweeted the most. That makes you the winner. Now, because I said I was going to do it and it just popped back in my mind, and I don't want to forget to do it, the apparent contradiction, verses 4 and 5, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou also be like unto him. We just talked and pointed out that. But the very next verse says, to answer the fool, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. So it seems like a contradiction, but it's not, because we're talking about two different things. Don't debate the fool. If the fool is running around spouting his nonsense off, and somebody said, you know, and the topic comes up with other people, tell them, you point out, this guy's an idiot. He has no idea what he's talking about. Here's the reason why. This is how you're answering the fool. See, verse 4 is cautioning against debating a fool. Otherwise, your wisdom is going to be spoken as foolishness. You're going to wind up with a whole crowd of idiots laughing at you and applauding some moron because she's sitting there going like, I don't know what you're talking about. Verse 5 is when people say, you know, this guy says this, that, or the other, and you point out the idiocy of it. You know, so that, you know, the next time he comes around and starts spouting that, other people are going to be like, we're not even listening to you. What do you mean?
What do you mean? I'm very smart.
Answer the points among people who may not understand. Don't get into a debate with a fool. It is... This is beyond vanity. Now, I've pointed it out before. Excuse me. It bears pointing out again. Folly and foolishness is not the same as ignorance. There's nothing shameful about ignorance. I'm ignorant about a lot of things. And so are you. If I read an article that gets into, like, say, a lot of fairly, to me at least, fairly complex algebra, algebra equations, I'm going to be lost. I'm ignorant on that stuff. I don't know it. You know, maybe I could sit down and study it if I wanted to learn. I'm not motivated to do that. That's not what I'm interested in. So I'm ignorant on that. You know, I mean, there's always going to be something you're ignorant. All ignorance means is you just don't know. Well, hell, there's no end to the list of stuff I don't know. Some of the stuff we talk about, you know, we may run into something and I'm going to say, I don't know. Something worth thinking about. I don't know. Or to me, it may not be worth thinking about. I don't know, but really I'm not interested in that. So I'm not really going to devote any energy towards it. Because I'm devoting energy, I'm directing my energy and my thoughts and study or whatever onto this other topic that I am interested in. Somebody who's really into, you know, trigonometry or complicated math, they're going to funnel their interest into that and to gaining knowledge and understanding in that. But they may be ignorant on things, philosophy or of a religious nature because they're not interested in that. We're all ignorant about it, so there's nothing wrong with it. Our whole, what we do as believers is a continual act of acknowledging our own ignorance. No matter how much time we study, no matter how much we read our Bible, no matter how much time we pray, we're only going to ever basically, for all intents and purposes, scratch the surface of our knowledge of the Lord. And yet we spend our entire lives doing that, knowing that we're still always going to be ignorant until we leave this world, and then we'll actually, the scales will be from our eye. You know, we will see as it's written, you know, right now we see as in a mirror with a poor reflection, but then we will see clearly. Then all of it will become clear to us. Right now, though, we struggle anyway to understand as much as we can. Again, nothing wrong with ignorance. We're always struggling. If we know it all, then there's nothing else to struggle and learn for, you know, or try to learn for. I told you my back is killing me. I'm doing pretty dang good, if I do say so myself, considering. If you suddenly think you know it all, then now about a topic that you're passionate about, then what's left to learn? You know it all, right? And you'll run into people like that. They act like they know it all, you know? Ask me anything on this. I know everything. Well, okay. I guess it must be pretty boring for you then, because now you know it all. We never know it all. There's always more to learn. There's always more to try to understand, more wisdom to attempt to gain. Folly is something else. Folly is not ignorance. Folly is, I mean, a good example of folly is what we just read in this account. Folly is ignorance, but you're wallowing it. You love it. You celebrate it. Folly is vanity. Folly is just on a road of pointless, how do I want to put it? Pointless ignorance, and you're good with it. All you're caring about in folly is how many people you can get to agree with you. You don't care whether or not you're right or wrong. Folly wallows in ignorance. Folly, biblical folly is, that's why I wanted to pick that story, because it was such a good example. The young woman he addressed. She's a fool. I mean, that is a snapshot, perfect picture of what a biblical fool is. She's ignorant and she don't care. In fact, she thinks it's smart to be ignorant. And the crowd, a crowd of fools, they agree. And yet, knowing this, and yet you will see people do it all the time. They'll answer a fool according to their folly. They'll get into a debate with a fool. Christian believers will fall for this bait over and over again. It's exasperating to me, whether it's on an internet forum or a video or even a podcast. You'll see it. Now, if one of you, for instance, was to write in and say, hey, I saw this deal and this non-believer, he claims this, that, or the other, and this is why the Bible is stupid. I will answer that. But I'm not going to get into a debate with one of these people. Because they're fools. See, this also directly relates. It's what Old Testament, New Testament have to go together. This directly relates. What we read here in the verse 4. About not answering a cool of cool. I'm getting on a roll. Not answering a fool according to his folly, or you'll be like them. You could draw a string from this, like one of those crime scene shows, or detective shows, and they're trying to put the clues together and they put the pins with the string. And you can draw a string and put a pin in from that to Jesus, to the admonition in the New Testament. Of not casting your pearls before swine. This is what he was talking about. If you don't understand that verse, it's directly related to that. Don't waste your time with these people. They don't want to know. And that's whatever. What's exasperating, that doesn't exasperate me because I don't care. If the fool is bound and determined to go wandering off in destruction and burn in hell, I don't care. I don't think I'm wrong not to care. Jesus didn't waste time on people who didn't want to hear him. He didn't want to hear the truth. He did not. If the mockers showed up and wandered off scoffing, he just kept on trucking. He didn't go chasing after them. Listen to me a little longer. I don't care. And yet, Christians will fall for this. Over and over, they'll start debating with these people. And it's pointless. It's not a discussion. And again, it comes back to people conflate discussions and debate as being the same thing. It's not. These Christians will think they're having a discussion with a non-believer who maybe he just wants to know. No, he doesn't. He has no interest in knowing. You're in a debate. And all they care about is how many people they can get to tell them, oh, you made him look stupid. It doesn't matter how good the facts are, just like the guy in the article we just read. It doesn't matter how good your facts are. It doesn't matter how you correct people. And they fall for it. It isn't even on the non-believer here. They are what they are. I don't understand why Christians go out and do this.
Well, they're defending the faith.
Against who? You're not defending the faith. I mean, again, if a third party says this guy says this, I don't know if he's right or not. What do you say? You answer that. You refute that nonsense. I do it here. I've done it here before. I'll point out common talking points that non-believers. I say non-believers, I'm being generous. I like to use the term atheist spurgs that they like to use because they have a handful. And I answer those because they should be refuted. But I'm not doing a debate. I don't care if they're going to go out there and say, see, he's afraid to debate. He's afraid. I don't care. I don't care if you think that. I don't give a shit. Go on in your folly. I'm not throwing my pearls before swine. And yet I see Christian people do it all the time. They'll go in. Whether it's just a simple back and forth on an internet forum or whether it's a more formal setting on a podcast or on a video on YouTube or whatever, And they'll go in, and every time it plays out the same way. The Christian believer is sitting up there acting like he's in the discussion. He's like the guy in our story, the professor in our story. He goes in thinking, acting as though he's in a discussion. And he's going to point out some facts and win the day. When in reality, he's in a debate. Facts don't matter. Who can do the best rhetoric? Who can sound funny and clever? Whatever. And it always plays out the same way. The non-believer shows up with his literal handful, probably five, familiar Bible verses that he thinks are gotchas. He throws these out there and then proudly declares how this proves that your faith is all wrong and you're stupid because we all came from monkeys or whatever the hell. Oftentimes, the Christian believer will then try to explain the context of these, you know, because this came out of a thick book here, explain the context of why he doesn't understand that those verses mean what they mean. The non-believer will then project what he's doing, which is cherry-picking a verse out of context to make it say what he wants to say. He will project that then upon the believer and say, oh, see, you're just making it. You're just making it say what you want it to say. And then, at this point, the believer is on the back foot and trying to explain, no, I'm trying to give you the correct context. And the little crowd of non-believers are sitting there going, oh, you made the Christian look stupid. And I'm always wondering, what are you trying to gain? Not the non-believer. That's irrelevant to me. I mean, the Christian person. That's actually who I'm being critical of in my scenario. What are you trying to gain? You know? If I was in a porta potty, I don't know if this is a very good analogy. Let's say I'm using a porta potty, one that hadn't been pumped in a couple weeks. It's summertime in Texas. And using the porta potty, in the process of using the porta potty, a $5 bill falls out of my pocket right down in there in the blue water, right on top of the Mount Everest of porta potty shit. Porty potty turd mountains. I ain't reaching in for it. I just lost $5. I don't care. Hell, if it's a $100 bill, I ain't reaching in there. I can, and that's a lot of money for me. I still ain't reaching in there. They ain't enough for me to. What am I gaining? Now imagine it's something silly like your ink pen. Your ink pen falls out of your pocket into the blue water. Stabs like a spear. It's like you look down in there and your favorite ink pen is sticking out of the top of that mountain of sludge like Excalibur. And you debating on reaching in there and have been pulling Excalibur out. What exactly are you gaining here? You know, I go get a pen. I ain't reaching in there. That's what it's like. What is the Christian believer trying to gain here? What are you trying to achieve? And believers fall for this sort of thing all the time. I find it very tiresome to watch people put themselves in a situation to where the faith gets mocked. And for no reason. I mean, it's something you should see from a mile away and not take part in. Again, Jesus warned about casting your pearls before swine. What are you trying to do?
Well, I might could save another soul for Jesus. I gotta be nice.
I'm amazed oftentimes at what Christian believers, you know, they have these misplaced notions of what are Christian virtues. And I hear them spout these things openly and say, you know, this is a Christian virtue. And I'm like, where? In what world is this Christian virtue? What they do a lot of times is they take Enlightenment ideals, which are firmly opposed, by the way, to Christian ideals, and they conflate the two. They'll take an Enlightenment thing and superimpose that on the faith. You know, for instance, tolerance. How many times have you seen or heard a Christian person talk about, you know, extol the virtues of tolerance in the Christian faith? We have to be tolerant. As Christian believers, it is incumbent upon us to be tolerant. Says who? How tolerant was Jesus Christ when he made a whip and started whipping the merchants out of the temple? That didn't seem very tolerant. How do you read the Bible and come up with tolerance is a Christian virtue? Now, patience is a Christian virtue. That's a different thing. You know, when you're dealing with somebody who's trying to come to the truth, but they're way behind and they're slow learners, you have to have patience. It helps because we think of the patience that is required from the Lord in dealing with us and how slow we ourselves have been to come to knowledge. That's not the same. Tolerance is not a Christian virtue. I think it comes back to something I've heard time and time again from various Christian people. I've somehow turned this into a quasi-tirade against fellow Christians. I don't mean it that way. It's meant to be a discussion, to come to an understanding where you were incorrect. I'm not downing anybody. I think it comes back to one of the things I've heard Christian people say on a regular, fairly regular occasion over the course of my life. And that is something along the lines of basically the God of the Old Testament is different. I've heard people literally say that. Well, the God of the Old Testament is not the God of the New Testament. That's different. That's a different God. Or if they don't go to that extreme, they will say something along the lines of essentially God changed his mind. You see, in the Old Testament, God was meaner. But then you see, God realized the error of his ways and adopted the Enlightenment. Never mind, it hadn't happened yet. God realized he needed to be more tolerant. He needed to be nicer. He realized he was incorrect and had to correct his ways and become tolerant. They're the same. Spoiler alert, they're the same God. I always tell new believers, you know, start off studying the New Testament because this is the foundation of your faith. But, I mean, that's just at the beginning. Your entire Christian study, your entire life you spend on this journey, and it is a lifetime journey, and your Christian faith should not just be studying the New Testament. You should start incorporating the old. I try to study my Bible. I try to read out of my Bible every day in an orderly fashion. And I'm at any time there. I have a study, a book I'm going through in the New Testament and a book I'm going through in the Old Testament. And one day I'll read a chapter from whatever book I'm in the Old Testament, and the next day a chapter from the New Testament. And then in this manner, you begin, when you do it long enough, it takes a while. You start putting the two together. Then it starts making sense. Again, this is a lifetime pursuit. And again, it points to the folly of getting into a debate with somebody who has their five verses they remember from when they were a kid in Sunday school. And they take their one of their five verses and uses it as a gotcha. And you're going to, as if they understand something that requires a lifetime of study, they understand it because they have this one verse here. Oh, and you got to love when these people, when they say, I've read the Bible. I don't know how many times I've heard some hardcore non-believer say, I've read the Bible. Have you? They have not read the Bible. They've not. I can 100% guarantee you they have not. 100%, that's a lie. I can assure you, most Christian people have not read the Bible. They have read bits and pieces and parts. It's an intimidating book. They've not read the Bible, but they will tell you they have. What they really mean is, like I say, they remember some Bible stuff from when they were a kid in Sunday school and their parents made them go to church and they're still mad about that. Again, most Christian people haven't read their Bible. Not the whole thing. Much less go back over the whole thing multiple times with a mindset not to cover the ground, but to study and to come to wisdom, learn and understand. And you're going to take that and put it into a bumper sticker slogan comeback, a quip, a tweet to correct somebody. No, it's the height of folly. Anyway, I get back on track because I'm wandering off here. Tolerance is not a Christian virtue. It's not in the Old Testament. It's not in the New Testament. It's not. One of the reasons the MCC is the MCC is because they're so damn tolerant, they put up with anything. They put up, you read in your New Testament, whether it's Paul, Peter, you can read in the New Testament where the apostles are writing to the churches they've established because they would establish these churches, try to put some people in charge because they had to keep moving. The faith is spreading. They got to keep moving so they move on to the next place and start starting a church there. Well, they would check in. How are things going back here at this church? Well, there were always any number of problems because you're dealing with people. And you're always going to run into people problems when you're dealing with people. And the church would, they write back and they find out that, well, essentially they've allowed some people to come in and start subverting. They got tolerant and they let people come in and start teaching some other doctrines. Oh, this is great what y'all got going on here. Hey, did that guy tell you about this? Did you know this? And they and the apostles would write back and tell them plainly, kick them out. Kick them out. If you don't kick them out, when I come back, I will kick them out. The apostles would write in their letters these explicit instructions to kick these people out. And if you haven't done it when I get there, I damn sure will. Doesn't sound very tolerant, does it? MCC today, they just tolerate everything. They will let people come in who are obvious subversives. They have no intention of looking at it. They come in with a mindset. They will see these people. They come in with a mindset that they're going to correct you. They're going to instruct you. And they tolerate it. Well, we don't want to seem ugly. We don't want to seem like we're not being nice. There's another misplaced Christian virtue, being nice. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm the nicest person you'd ever meet. I really am. Until I'm not. I treat people fairly. This is what biblical love is when they talk about loving your enemies. It means you treat people fairly. When the Bible says, don't repay evil with evil, repay evil with good. They're not sitting there talking about let someone crap all over you. They're saying treat people fairly. Treat people the way you want to be treated. You do business fairly. That person may be a cheater and a liar and the world's biggest sack of shit. But that doesn't mean you get back at them by doing the same thing, because then how are you any different? You treat them fairly. But you don't let them trick you. You don't let them cheat you. When they try to cheat you, you call them out and say, yeah, no, we're not doing that. You're trying to pull a fast one. I know what you're doing. We can do it this way, which is the fair way for both of us, or you can get the hell out of here. That's all that means. And people make it complicated. Oh, well, the Bible says we just got to take it. The Bible says we just got to let these people, because we got to be tolerant. We got to be nice. We don't want to be rude. I don't know. I'm sure it's happened. I'm not trying to be too generalization and too hard on people. But I would venture to say it is very rare when the last time anyone was kicked out of a damn church? And that's a problem. It really is. Because you're always going to have subversives. It happened in the early churches. You think it isn't happening now? And they'll let people come in, and they're obviously subversive. Everybody knows they're subversive. But what do? They just keep tolerating it. And too often, they let them change the church because nobody wants to stand up and say, hey, who put you in charge? You've been here like 6 months, and you're acting like you're running the place, and you want to change everything and turn it into your vision. And it's subversive. Get the hell out. They won't. They nice and tolerant until that person has destroyed the church. What'll happen is they subvert it to the point to where the people who are truly believers there that are trying to get to a greater knowledge, wisdom, and understanding and fulfillment of the Lord, they just leave because that's all you can do. Nobody will stand up and point this out. Now, they themselves should stand up and point it out. And even though everybody's going to say no, you know, oh, you're being ugly. This goes to the next verse 5. Answer a fool according to his folly. In other words, you stand up and when you have your church meeting and everybody's sitting there on their hands being nice and being tolerant while this obvious subversive is subverting and ultimately going to destroy your church. Maybe you're not a deacon. Maybe you're just somebody in the congregation. And when everybody goes, does anybody want to add something to it? Just go ahead and say it. Well, I think this is bullshit. I think he is a subversive, and I think we should kick him out. Now, more than likely in that situation, they're going to kick you out because you're not nice. You're not tolerant. But so be it. You spoke the truth. You know, you spoke the truth. You spoke it. You testified against it. And then you can walk out and leave. Time and time again, these people come in, they subvert a church, they undermine it. Ultimately, the church will close down because the people that, you know, who wants to go? Well, all these mainline Protestant churches that have embraced the latest things of the world, and they all have failing congregations. And what does the satanic media write about this? They write it in the context of, oh, see, people really turning off on Christianity because it's not tolerant. They write these articles. Oh, fewer and fewer people in America, in the West, identify as Christian believers. You see, nobody's really interested in that. Of course, as always, the devil's a liar and a murderer. The truth is, everybody tolerated this crap until you have a rainbow LGBT congregation celebrating whatever is the latest leftist cause. And people who are, you know, the only reason you would go to church is to try to spiritually grow and gain wisdom and understanding. So if people want to do that, just get up and leave. They're just like, well, it ain't here. You know, I can turn on TV and get nonstop alphabet propaganda or whatever. Why don't need to take time out of my weekend to come submit myself to more of this? And they leave. Of course, like I say, the media will sit there and write it up that people are just turned off from Christianity because it's just so outdated. And, you know, at the end of the day, the reason is nobody stood up and called them out, especially church leadership, because you're just a regular member of the congregation. You can call them out and they're just going to poo-poo and not listen to you. I still think it's worth calling out and speaking the truth because then your conscience is clear. But especially church leaderships, that you should have people stand up and kick these people out. They don't. They tolerate it. Again, and it's a misplaced Christian virtue. And you understand more how misplaced that is when you understand God in the Old Testament is God in the New Testament. Didn't morph into another being. They didn't elect a new administration. Now, our discussion today has been pretty Christian-centric. But understand, what we're talking about here discussion versus debate, to get back on to the overall theme of this show. It applies across the board. I used a lot of, you know, the Christian element to it because it's very, I think it's very illustrative. But you can apply this to any topic. Again, the article we used as an example had nothing to do with Christianity. It's the idea of people going into acting like they're going to have a discussion and instead they're in a debate and not really grasping the meaninglessness, how meaningless it is. You can apply this. In other words, this applies outside of Christianity. I wound up going very hardcore on the Christian stuff because that's what I'm interested in. I'm not interested in politics. Now, you know, I know most of you tune into Radio Albion. It's you're probably very politically oriented, and I do keep up with politics as an observer. I do discuss it. Oftentimes, it's because I believe we have a responsibility to testify against it. Our words have meaning, and what we're doing is testifying against them. So later they can't say, oh, well, nobody told us we were doing wrong. We're testifying against their, you know, to their sin and their wickedness and their folly. But I mean, as far as an actual interest in politics, I don't have one. You know, a lot of y'all, again, you tune in to Radio Albion, you probably are, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not being critical. I personally don't have an interest in it. So as such, since my interest lies in the faith and the wisdom and understanding of the faith, it kind of turned into being a very Christian-centric the way I discussed this. But it applies across the board. You know, regardless of what your interest, regardless of what the topic is, understanding the difference between a discussion and a debate is going to get you a long way. Again, you're welcome to waste your time. And if you think that there's other people, you're doing it for third parties or something, it's whatever. I personally, again, I believe you're better off. Because as we read in Proverbs, not saying talking about the faith, they're talking in general of dealing with fools. I think a person is better served just refuting the points instead of getting into some sort of pointless, you know, debate that's just going to be nothing more than a rhetorical attempt at gotcha. Where if they can get their audience to sit there and clap and laugh at you, they can act like they win, even though they're leaving just as ignorant as how they came in. Anyway, I that's about all I got to say. I'm looking at the time, and it's like I'm going to be a little short today, but it's all good. Most of the time I run long. If I run out of stuff to say, I'm not going to sit here and just keep milking it to fill the time in. I think it's important, though, to always stop and consider what, you know, what you're getting into, you know, a discussion. A discussion is always worth having, but both people are trying to get to the truth. Otherwise, you're in a debate, and think what you may about that, but time and time again, it's a waste of time because it's not about coming to the truth. And you ultimately wind up looking like as big a fool as the actual fool. And it's a meaningless endeavor. I'm going to go ahead and wrap up on that note. Like I say, I'm a few minutes shorter than I should be, but it is what it is. No sense to keep milking it out. I appreciate you tuning in and joining this week. I hope you got something out of the show. Hope you'll enjoy the rest of the week. And of course, as always, I hope I'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.